This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7. I'm Dan Hurley. Great art often uses moments of profound change as the inspiration to explore the human experience. That is what the Cincinnati Opera is doing this month in its production of a challenging chamber opera. As One explores the experiences of a transgender protagonist, Hannah, as she transitions from male to female in her gender identity. In addition to the range of challenges around appearance involved for trans people at the time of their transition, the question of the qualities of their voice is also critical. Inserting this dynamic into an opera, where, of course, voice is pivotal, makes the production of As One the perfect opportunity to invite the community to join in a conversation about the issues around transgender generally, but also around the role of voice in that experience. To explore this, we are joined today by the Harry T. Wilkes, Artistic Director of the Cincinnati Opera, Evans Mirages, Speech Language Pathologist at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center, John Fredeking, Speech-Language Pathologist at the University of Cincinnati Academic Medical Center, Renee Gustin, and Capital One Senior Manager of Technology, Jennifer Henderson, who is a trans woman and LGBT plus advocate. To join our discussion, call 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Welcome, everybody, to
Thank you for having us.
Evans, let's begin with you. Why did you want to do this opera? What was the motivation for producing this opera at this moment?
We've begun a journey at Cincinnati Opera called CO Next, Diverse Voices. This is actually the inaugural production in this new series of operas. Each year, we will produce an opera that is designed to be in a what we call a non-traditional space, so not a proscenium theater, scored for small forces, rarely more than 10 or 15 protagonists total, and always engaging with an issue of importance to our community today. Now, you could say that traditional operas do that in a more roundabout way because they're all about morality or ethics or how you conduct yourself in society. But the wonderful thing about the creativity of new works today is that they engage with these with people that we can recognize. These are not the kings and queens and gods and goddesses of antiquity and mythology. They're people you could know and issues that we all face. And As One seemed to be the near ideal way to start this journey because, first of all, it's an opera that exists and already has had nearly 20 productions. Mm-hmm. Around the country. It's a runaway hit. It's an opera that was only premiered in 2014 in Brooklyn. And so it seemed an ideal way to start because not that only did it tick all the boxes, but it's a terrific piece of music. And like any opera, if it's doing its job well, the topic may be specific, but the ramifications of it are general and applies to everyone. Everyone makes a journey in their life. Everyone makes a transformation in their life. This happens to be, of course, a very dramatic one. Gender is a dramatic transformation. But finding your place in the world is as dramatic for the individual as well. So it was the near perfect choice for us.
Okay. Jen, you made this transition. Mm-hmm. And when you were in the process of transitioning, was the question of voice on your mind going into it, in the midst of it? How did voice figure into all of this?
So voice is very interesting, especially for a trans woman. Trans men have it a little bit easier, and I know the pathologist will talk about that and that testosterone has a significant effect on the voice. But it's an irreversible effect. So if you're a person who's had testosterone for a long period of time, your vocal cords are naturally thicker and lower. I know a lot of people that that are trans women who the most difficult part of their day is if they have to make a phone call into a call center and identify themselves and then hope that they don't get misgendered during that phone call. Hmm. And it's interesting because gender is something that's very core. We talk about transitioning gender. Gender doesn't transition. You're born with it, but it's how you actually express it. And so for a trans woman, you're not only expressing it with how you dress and how you present yourself, but your voice is also very, very important.
And did you Have you, do you work with a speech pathologist?
I have not had the pleasure to. I've had a couple sessions where it was a community gathering where we got to speak to speech pathologists, and I got to say that they I was actually moved to tears in Chicago when I went to one because the pathologist worked for me for just 5-10 minutes, and the voice that she was able to allow me to express myself with, I didn't think could come out of my throat, and it was an amazing experience. Huh.
So finding out that voice is something that is mutable to some degree.
Correct, and especially as somebody who's not an opera singer, I can barely carry a tune in a bucket. So, you know, to have somebody work through you and all the exercises that you need to do in order to achieve some level of success was very empowering.
Renee, when someone comes to you, mm-hmm. You're a speech pathologist, when someone comes to you who is trans mm-hmm. and is concerned about the voice quality, mm-hmm. what is it that they usually want? Well, not so much what do you do? We'll get to that in a minute. But what do they ask you for?
Most people who come in ask for a higher pitch or a lower pitch. Usually patients will come in talking specifically about how high or how low their voice is.
Okay.
But there's much more to voice therapy than that. So we talk about that, but then I also talk to patients about the other aspects of voice. It's not just how high or how low. There are other components.
For example?
So, for example, there's inflection. So the natural rises and falls of the voice. There's articulation, so the way that you pronounce the particular sounds in our language. There is resonance, so the vocal tone, the way that you sound your timbre. And then there's word choice and semantics, the way that we choose to express ourselves. So we end up going into that, but most people come in specifically saying, I want to have a higher pitched voice.
Okay. Now, John, when someone's coming to you and who is trans and who is making this transition, and this was hinted at a little bit by Jen, that it isn't the same for a trans woman as a trans man. Explore that a little bit. What are the different challenges and how much help can you give in each of those situations?
So thinking about trans voice as a whole, we mostly do see trans women because estrogen does not have any effect on the voice. It doesn't lower it. It doesn't heighten it. So we have to think about for trans women, what their ultimate goal is. So we're going to be working on raising the pitch or working on inflection, making the resonance a little bit more feminine. Now, when we say these words, feminine and masculine, we have to think about the patient or the client and what is their idea of feminine and masculine. We all have these ideas in our head. My idea of feminine is not probably the same as anyone in this room. So we have to think about that. For men, we have to think about testosterone.
And do you try to talk that out with the patient?
Absolutely. The first session really is about creating a laundry list of their goals. We educate them on voice markers, so like Renee was talking about, pitch, resonance, inflection. We educate them on all those markers, and then it's their job to guide us to where they want to be, and our ultimate job is to make sure they're doing it in a healthy way and an authentic way.
Okay. And have you yourself work with people who are trans and are working on their voice?
Absolutely, yes. The only patients I've seen have been trans women.
Okay.
And across the board, all of them have come in wanting a higher pitch and working on resonance to make their quality a little bit more light and airy.
And that is challenging because if they went through puberty,
exactly,
their vocal cords are physically changed.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely,
is that,
yes.
Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a limit to what you can do.
Absolutely. So that's, again, why we're there, to make sure they're doing it in a healthy way and always checking in with them about how does that feel in their voice.
Okay. Evans, before, I do have a question for you, but we have a caller, and I want to make sure that, and it's really directed at you. So I want, Lily, you have an observation or a point?
Yes. I'm not a big fan of opera as a genre, but I'm a huge fan of Cincinnati Opera because you always raise, excuse me, wonderful, important themes in conjunction with the operas you bring to town and build community with events and discussions. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
thank you, Lily, for making that observation. Evans, in this particular production, As One, as I understand it, there are two different singers who play Hannah. Is that correct?
That's correct. And they're called Hannah before and Hannah after.
And why that rather than looking for somebody – well, why that? Why that choice rather than a single person?
You probably have to ask the composer, Laura Kaminsky. But when Laura and Kimberly Reed and the librettist Mark Campbell were creating the opera, we as yet did not have anybody in the profession who was actually a transgender opera singer, fully fledged and ready to, as it were, take on the world. And also I think what Mark and Laura and Kim wanted to do was to emphasize the journey and the fact that as someone is making the transition, they are moving from, as it were, one aspect of their identity to another, but it is not, as it were, on-off or off-on. It's a back and forth. It's a journey that sometimes has one step forward and two steps backward. And there is an inner dialogue that goes on inside any of our heads when we're contemplating something really dramatic. And so what Laura was able to do with the music and Mark and Kim were able to do with the words is remind us that gender identity is a continuum. It's a fluid journey, and it's not one day you wake up and, okay, I am now going to be a woman. It's an enormous process filled with terror sometimes and tremendous joy as well. And so what Laura has done so brilliantly is that Hannah before, played by Matthew Worth, baritone, and Hannah after, played by Amber Fasquel, mezzo-soprano, sing in duet. Sometimes they sing in unison, the same words going along together because the two, as it were, personalities are making the journey together. And
sometimes, so they're on the stage together?
Always. There is almost never a moment where they are apart. So you have to understand that the story is told by Hannah before and Hannah after always simultaneously. So you are – sometimes when Hannah after is explaining some of the experiences that she has as she first is trying out this female identity in the real world, Hannah before standing off to one side as if to say, go, go, I'm supporting you, you know. And there are other times when Hannah before is deeply worried about Hannah after, because there is a scene in the opera where Hannah after is subjected to violence. She's walking alone in a darkened parking lot to get to her car, and she is assaulted. Terrible language is used at her, and she nearly has a tremendous violence done to her and just barely escapes. And the way that Robin Guarino has staged this is absolutely terrifying. You really feel the ever-present danger, and all Hannah before can do is observe. But there are times when they come together in duet, and it is so beautifully etched that this is a journey, this is a duality of personality coming into a new identity. So they sing together a lot.
Okay. Jennifer, does that, without getting into the specifics of that particular person, mm-hmm. Hannah, does that ring true to you?
Oh, absolutely. It's very common. It is a journey. It is a long journey. From the time that you decide to make the decision to the time that you essentially feel we call it going full time. It does take some time, and luckily we have some people here from Children's where we've got trans youth that are coming out at younger and younger ages where they don't really have to experience the aspects of being an older trans person, where it's a bit more difficult just because of the changes that you go through. Also, I was really lucky here in the Cincinnati area in that I had quite a group of friends, family that were very supportive. My job was very supportive. So I actually had a much easier time than most. But I will say the stories that I am told by others are heartbreaking. And it is a struggle and it's difficult. But for a person who is trans, you don't honestly have a choice. It's something that you have to get out of yourself or you will feel, in my particular case, before I had very, very deep depression and suffered from it greatly. And this has been difficult on my family, but it's also the best thing I've ever done.
Okay. John, you work at Children's. How early would you start to work with children who express the fact that they have I don't even know if they have the language or what language they might use, that they have gender identity questions?
So for the younger population, it's very important to wait to modify voice until puberty. However, there are some speech-language pathologists, I among them, who are wanting to help the younger population, you know, as young as 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, just to know that their voice can be played with and to do some vocal exploration with that. I would never, you know, work on modifying a child's voice before puberty, but I would let them know that the voice is an instrument and it can be played in many different ways, and just to allow them that exploration and that playfulness with their voice.
That must ring for an opera person.
It's incredibly familiar because within the cisgender opera community of baritones and tenors and mezzo-sopranos and sopranos, of course. Now, mind you, staying within the same identity, but people change voice category within those cisgender identities all the time. Many, many men who start out as baritones, you know, their teachers call them lazy tenors because they're just afraid to make that leap into that upper third of their voice that will get them to sing the proverbial high C. And so it's a training process like you're doing, although it's within the one gender identity. Same with women. Many women start out as mezzo-sopranos. It's to categorize that voice category or the baritone, it's the kind of range that most of us can sing in. It's what I call the folk singer range. So if you're a woman and you're a folk singer, you're probably a mezzo-soprano. If you're a man and you're a folk singer, you're probably a baritone. It's the trained voices, the unusually high voices in both of the sexes that take a tremendous amount of effort. And then it happens in the other direction too sometimes. Someone misidentifies as a soprano and is struggling terribly to sing that repertoire. And she finally realizes with the help of a teacher, oh, thank God I don't have to sing so high. I'm really a mezzo-soprano. I can sing in the lower range. Mm. Happens to men too. Also happens with age. Okay. Some people start out as sopranos and wind up as mezzos, and some people start out as tenors and wind up as baritones.
Renee, in the population, the trans population that you work with, what age range are you working?
Well, I start seeing patients after, if they've been at Children's, they've graduated, quote unquote, graduated from Children's. So I see patients that are 18, goodness, I think one of my older patients is in their 60s. Mm-hmm. So it spans the age range. It spans the lifespan.
Now, depending on a person's age, but also there could be more alike than different. I don't know, but the point is, there's a lot of issues to be dealing with.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so speech is just one of those. So if you become a speech pathologist, helping someone navigate this transition, you're also probably having the opportunity to have discussions about a lot of other things too. Is that true?
Yes. You treat the entire person. Yes, we are voice pathologists and we focus on these two little tiny strings that we call the vocal folds. But if you ignore the person as a whole, I don't think that you're doing them a service. So there are many sessions where we discuss dysphoria, so the feeling of not being in the right, and Jennifer, correct me if I'm wrong, but the feeling of not being in the right body.
Right. Well, actually, there's actually two different forms of dysphoria, just to be precise. Mm-hmm. There's body dysphoria, where you just don't feel that your body matches what's in your soul. There's also what's called social dysphoria, where you're pretty comfortable with your body, but then the way people treat you is different than what you feel like you are as far as your gender. And that's starting to be explored more and more as far as social pressure versus individual pressure on your own gender identity.
One's coming from the outside, one's coming from the inside.
And that's one thing that we notice a lot in voice therapy is that as a patient's training and working on their voice, it can cause a lot of dysphoria. I have some patients who ask or request that we don't play back any recordings that we do because they're not ready to hear that.
Okay. don't play back recordings of them as they go through the process?
Of them as they're practicing, as we're doing different exercises. They don't feel comfortable hearing their voice back. Mm-hmm. Not yet, maybe. It's a great feedback tool. But there are some sessions where, yes, we don't maybe do a specific vocal exercise, but instead we're working on the person as a whole or the place that they are in their transition. Yeah, you wear a lot of different hats as a voice pathologist.
John, you were shaking your head.
Yeah, so something Renee said, you know, about where are they in the transition. I've had clients who are not fully out. So we're working on their voice and they can obtain a beautiful voice, but it's only within a therapy session. It's not, they're not comfortable doing it out in public yet. So being very, very sensitive to that.
This is a way of trying on. Mm-hmm. Of getting ready, of moving forward?
Yes. I have some of my mentors in speech pathology who have been working with trans voice for many years have oftentimes said that a speech pathologist will be the first person a trans person might come out to because their voice is the most important part of their transition. It's helping them not to be misgendered. And so that's a really large role to play.
That's really interesting that for some people, voice is the first thing mm-hmm. rather than appearance.
Well, and it is interesting because there just a couple different caveats on that. One speech therapy is normally not covered by insurance. So it's something that's normally out of pocket. And so it's something that someone has to actually invest in. And I will say for me personally, I'm a public speaker, both at work and for the community. And I can remember early on in my transition, some of the things that would give me sort of a kickback, a little dysphoria, would be when I would be on a conference call or something like that. And they would be feedback and I could hear myself. Mm-hmm. And that will throw you when you realize what you kind of sound like in front of a large group of people.
Well, I want to thank all of my guests today for discussing the questions raised by the production of the Cincinnati Opera as One. Good luck, Evans, with the performances and post-show panel discussions tonight, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday and Monday. Am I right on that?
That's correct.
So you have an opportunity to discuss this. Mm-hmm. And you can find more information about As One Opera on our website, wvxu.org.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website, wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.